Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, here to give you the inside track on what? On all health topics. Today's health topic, bad surgeries versus good surgeries. Each day, millions of Americans make decisions that will affect them for the rest of their life, and sometimes all too hastily. Now, I'm not here to tell you not to get surgeries. I'm here to tell you to be smart about the surgery you get. And of course, that's why I do the show, so you can get smart about the surgery you may have to make a decision on at some point in your life. There's a bunch of them that are very good, so this isn't going to be a show condemning surgery. Sometimes surgeries are critical, often they're life-saving, and we have to think of us as blessed because we have these options. However, very often these surgeries are unnecessary, they're done too hastily, there are options that are not explored, and of course it comes down to which surgery is which, and that's what today's show is about. So I'm going to mention a good surgery, and then I'm going to mention a bad surgery. And at the end of the show, you're going to have a list of surgeries I think are essential. At the same time, you're going to have a list of surgeries I think you should think three times about and know the consequences of, so that even if you have to get the surgery, even if a bad surgery has no choice, and therefore it's not really a bad surgery, you can mitigate the dangerous, sometimes life-altering side effects of those surgeries. Now, that's fair enough to everybody. Really, there's only one science, and that's the science that works. There shouldn't be holistic medicine versus allopathic medicine. It shouldn't go that way. There should be one medicine, a unified medicine based on common sense. All too often, we throw that common sense out the window. If you're new to the show, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. That's double T.cc. If you're driving, of course, don't do that. If you're driving, stay off the cell phone. If you're driving, you can't lift the cell phone. I think, what is it? We have a new law, if you didn't know. I just found out. Don't raise that cell phone higher than the window. Something like that. All right. First one I'm going to tell you is a good surgery. When, unfortunately, you're told you have a tumor, cut out the tumor. I've said this before on my cancer shows. I'll say it again. Do not be one of those people that wants to shrink the tumor or get rid of the tumor holistically. Please do not do that, because it's risky. If the option for the tumor, the breast tumor, the pancreatic tumor, you know, Steve Jobs is the famous story of that. Steve Jobs, with all the connections he had, being the maverick, I guess, that he was, the original thinker, the out-of-the-box guy that built, of course, Apple. I don't know about you. I don't think Apple's staying on its stride anymore. I see it starting to slip. That's natural when your innovators are gone. And he was a great, great innovator. When he got his pancreatic cancer, he went holistic. Probably that was not a good idea. Probably that cost him his life. I don't know if you've watched all the documentaries on Jobs and that decision, but I mean, he did a bogus therapy. And a lot of these therapies where they tell you, we're going to shrink the tumor, get rid of the tumor, you'll be just fine, they don't work. And I speak from a lot of experience personally exploring different health centers throughout the world in the United States that all claim they're going to get rid of your tumor. If you can get the tumor cut out easily, meaning relatively easily, get it cut. Now, the decision to do chemo, the decision to do radiation, that is another story. Read Burton Goldberg's book, Questioning Chemotherapy. I don't think we've got good stats on chemo. I don't think we have great stats on radiation. I mean, I don't think the choice to do chemo or radiation after you cut out a tumor shows any significant efficacy long term. That I doubt. But the issue about cutting the tumor out, you've got to get the tumor cut, which means prevention is worth the pound of cure, which means a lot of tumors are caught too late because people don't want to do their routine checkups. Now, our technologies are pretty good. So even if your healthcare is crummy, even if you don't like your provider, even if for even simple stuff they botch all the time, one thing we've got down pretty darn well is how to find a tumor. Whether it's breast, whether it's colon, whether it's lung, whether it's brain, we've got some very good technologies. So even your average healthcare systems, your average healthcare providers can find tumors. We've been working on finding tumors a long time, and we've gotten very good. So I'm going to start with the good surgery. Number one, do your preventative checkups. Don't ask me or anybody, should I do that whole thing for the colon? That yearly colon check that everybody passes on. Should you do it? Especially if you're in a higher risk group, like you've had it in the family, like you have other markers. Yes, you should. Should I get my mammogram? On top of a mammogram, I think you should all get into thermography. There are some really good thermographers around, and you're going to hear from your oncologist that thermography really is just too vague and general. And that's true, it is, but if you understand it, you can use it in a way that's way better than mammograms. You use the mammograms to back up the thermography. If you've got breast cancer in your family, every single year you should be getting thermograms. And you compare one thermogram to another, and if you find a hot spot, you watch that hot spot. The reason your oncologists don't like thermography, one reason is you get a lot of false positives, meaning you see hot spots, areas of higher metabolic activity in the breast, and that's alarming, and it could be cancer, and you go running into your oncologist thinking you've got cancer because you've got a hot spot you didn't have before, and it's nothing. It's a cyst. It's just whatever. A bruise. But better be safe than sorry. And that's the concept with the thermography. So ladies, breast cancer, breast tumors, check it with thermography. Don't be afraid of the mammogram. And don't start with, well, mammograms cause cancer. And forget it all. The smartest move you're ever going to make is to catch a tumor in the breast when the malignancy is very small. They're going to go in there. It's going to be marginated. They're going to tell you they've got it all. We've got it all. And that's it. Even your oncologist won't recommend radiation or chemo when it's marginated and they've got it all. When they're sure they've got it all, they check the lymph just for fun and they make sure it's not in any of the sentinel nodes. Guess what? That's it. And statistically, you're never going to see cancer again. Don't be one of those holistic people that wait until it's the size of, what, a lemon? I've seen women wait until it's the size of a grapefruit, thinking that the holistic community is going to fix it. This is a pipe dream. Yeah, these things occur, but you don't know when it's going to occur and when it's not going to occur. So play it safe. Now, if you're in that situation where after it's cut out, unfortunately, it's gotten into the lymph. It's metastasized to different organs. They're telling you you've got to get fried now, chemo, radiation, the slew of things. This is a different argument now. I don't care what the allopaths say. Really, that we have good evidence that after metastasis, chemo is going to prolong your life. In any significant, I mean, there's as many studies that'll say if you've had a tumor and it's metastasized, after you cut the tumor, to do the chemo and the radiation repeatedly is going to slow down the growth and prolong life. Now you're in very debatable territory. So I would never support it personally. Of course, I have to give you the other side of that. To the medical community, after you've had something like a metastasis, there's no options. It's not like you can hope to slow down the progression of the cancer doing anything on your own. You see, as far as they're concerned, that possibility doesn't exist. And on that basis, it's moral, it's ethical, it's the standard of care to insist after you've had the tumor taken out, because it's metastasized, say it's a stage 2 or a stage 3, it's in multiple organs, that you're going to need chemo and radiation, and that is a matter of the standard of code. It's a matter of ethics, morality, the Hippocratic Oath, everything that a good, caring oncologist would advise you is true. Because it assumes there's nothing you can do. And we don't agree with that. We don't agree with that. If you study cancer, if you study the spread of cancer, if you study all the things that make cancer grow in the body, there are tons of things you can do to slow it down, to even get rid of it. The problem is those things are radical. You have to consider reality here. The average person, after they've lived a life that's unfortunately brought them a cancer, they go through the emotional anguish of a surgery and the pain. Well, now it's time to get radically healthy. Now it's time to give up all your sweets, your coffees, your boozes, your cigarettes, your toxic environments, your stress, this, that, the other thing. And you're going to take that upon yourself at that phase in your life when you're most vulnerable. You're going to get radically healthy. And you see, that's the catch. After you've had a tumor taken out, if you really want to hit a home run, if you really want to mitigate the spread or stop it, period, you have to get radical. You have to do drastic things. Who's going to pick up from the inner city and move to the countryside? Who has the money to start to go to those holistic anti-cancer centers? Holloway. What Nick Gonzalez used to do. Any of these people you look up down in Mexico, in Europe, like Holloway in Germany. Ursula Jacobs, she's somewhere in I think it's Munich. I may be wrong. I mean, throughout the world, including the United States, we have centers that work with cancer. I don't care who it is. None of them have results to brag about. And yet, many of them do have veritable, documented cases of metastases or tumors disappearing. But you don't know if that's you or not you. And that's the issue. But what I'm saying to you is, after you've had a tumor taken out, after you've made a decision, cost-benefit, not to do chemo or radiation, part of getting radically healthy may be going to one of those centers and really getting into a preventative therapy. And this is all part. And I've done shows on radical health, what you do to heal radically. After you've had the tumor taken out, you have to think radically. Less than that, I don't know. Another cancer we must discuss, prostate. If you're on the website, go down to picture number, I put it at the end, the 4K score, that's picture, it's called the 4K score, the markers for prostate cancer. And the one thing, gentlemen, you've got to get tested that I don't see tested enough is the HK2, the human kallikrein 2. It's a marker used to determine the probabilities that the cancer in the prostate is aggressive. Again, this is for men. This is for prostate cancer. And as we all know, these radical prostatectomies that are done very routinely involve what? Impotence, that's it. So you're 60, you're 65, you're 70. That's the end of your sex life. 2, often it comes with incontinence. 3, what you've really got to do is hope you can get one of the surgeons that's great at nerve sparing. nerve-sparing prostatectomies. And again, even that's a coin toss. Sometimes they just aren't going to be able to save the nerves. But here's the point. It is very cutting edge now, and this is very oncologically supported, this statement, that we leave the gentleman with the cancer intact. Because if your HK2 is in the right ranges, it guarantees that the cancer's going to grow so slowly that you're not going to deal with it till you're 105 years old. So this is the thing. You get hit with a nasty diagnosis in your 70s. You've got prostate cancer. Maybe you can feel the lump. It may be that it's already been growing 10 years. This is so slowing, so slow in growth, it may wall itself off. You may never know you have it. They say many men die with prostate cancer and never knew they had it. You want to know the reality? If we really did autopsies on people, if in 1 year we took all the people that died in America, if not the world, and did autopsies on them, what we wouldn't find hasn't been invented. Unbelievable what people live with and they never know. And it looks like prostate cancer is falling into that group. At the same time, you can get it at 50 or 55 or 60 years old. And it can be one of those aggressive ones, one of those that's on the way to the bone and it's going to rip through your bone. Okay, this is why we're doing this 4K score, but the key component is the HK2. I don't even see this measured often. Often enough, I don't see it measured. Still, I don't see it measured. So be in the know. If you want more, get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Get to know that HK2 component. If any of you are dealing with an increased PSA and it's alarming and somebody feels an irregularity on digital exam, make sure you get the HK2 marker, because if it's in a reasonable range and you're 70 years old, you'll be 120 before that thing blows up on you. And you save yourself the pain, the anguish, the impotence, the urinary incontinence of a surgery. If you have to have one, make sure you get somebody that's really into. And I brought this up in the last week's show, the difference between surgeons state to state. If there's a guy out there, board certified, all the credentials, all the educations, doing his YouTube clips, stating, listen, I advanced these techniques, I know how to do them, and if I cut your prostate out, you will not be impotent. Go to that guy. Find the extra money on the side. Take the second mortgage. Do whatever you have to do. Cash out a few accounts. Whatever it is, pay the extra money to get the better surgery. That is an investment in the end you never, ever regret. And when you ask your home guy, your guy at the Kaiser in wherever, or Cedars-Sinai, or UCLA, if you happen to ask them and they tell you, I don't believe that, you have to understand the way this works. If you study the evolution of medical technology, surgical advance, it's always some maverick somewhere that comes up with it, and he's respected in his circle. Things go slow in medicine. They go really slow in medicine. And what it's done is make medicine very conservative. Excuse me. What the legal system has done is make medical advancement move very slowly. A surgeon's got to be careful. So if some guy's doing a nerve-sparing surgery in Washington, in some in Baltimore, out in Johns Hopkins or something, and some guy in Los Angeles hears about it, the guy in L.A. has to be careful. Because if his peers aren't doing it, if it's not, quote-unquote, beyond reproach, and he tries to do the surgery and something goes wrong, he's dead in the water. Remember, I told you last week, your surgeon, before he does a surgery, is thinking about number one. And number one is not you. Number one is his license. Personally, I'm not going to argue that choice. I don't think you'd argue the choice. Do you want your surgeon to do something on your behalf? I mean, be honest, that would cost him his license if it goes south? If you're honest, no, the answer is no, you wouldn't. So you have to understand what that means. When you have to make a choice, go out of state. Scan the world. Go scan the world. And don't think America is the only place that has medical advancement. A lot of times the American mavericks go outside the United States. That's another aspect. You see this emerging with stem cell therapy. You got to understand, before American medicine goes mainstream, before something goes mainstream, the numbers have to get crunched. There are political and economic aspects to whether or not a medical advancement becomes reality in the mainstream of American medicine. You got to get that one straight or you're going to get the screw. And I see examples of this all the time. All right, let's keep going. We're going to tie together a bunch of different surgeries today. All right, bypass surgery. I'm going to call this the Bill Clinton therapy, the Bill Clinton surgery. President Clinton, now let's forget politics, okay? Handsome, charming politician. I mean, by and large, politics aside, Bill Clinton was a suave, brilliant Rhodes Scholar. Look what's happened to this guy. If you look at him pre-bypass and post-bypass, he's aged 30 years. That's what happens in bypass surgeries. So the plaque builds up. Your cardiologist doesn't catch it. The plaque's building up because this, that, and the other thing are all off. Nobody's doing the tests. Don't think your typical cardiac profile is catching the growth of the plaque. Please don't think that. Anybody interested, I've done shows on the right and the wrong tests to get, how to interpret them, how to tell your cardiologist what you need. So you're that person that had it in the family and the plaque's just growing. And finally, you start getting hints. Angina. Your cardiac markers are off the chart. You have a bad day with reality and you have a mini heart attack. This stuff will hit you out of nowhere in a variety of ways. You have a smart cardiologist and you happen to mention that when you exercise at the gym, you get out of breath very easily. And your cardiologist catches it, looks for family history, looks at you, and decides, you know what? You may be plaqued too heavily. They do an angiogram, and sure enough, three of your coronary arteries are 90% occluded, and you're facing bypass. Now, at picture three, look at picture three if you get a chance on straighttalk.cc. If not, do it later. Listen, you know, surgery is not simple. There is no surgery that's simple. If you know surgeons, I've known enough surgeons, I've sat down with enough surgeons over enough years, and they all say the same thing. Surgery is not simple. There is no surgery that's simple. Years ago, I knew a plastic surgeon, and he came up to my office, and he was limping. And I said, well, you know, why don't you get that thing fixed? He had torn a ligament. He had torn a ligament in his ankle, and he limped. And he was a plastic surgeon. And I said, why don't you get the thing fixed? And he said, no one's going to cut into me. And I looked at him like, you're a plastic surgeon. You slice faces open all week long. And he said, surgery's not simple. Now, I've heard that a bunch of times over 25 years. And when you cut into the flesh, you're cutting through something. Surgeons cut through the fascia. Now, my regular audience knows what that means. And if you're new to the show, cutting through the connective tissue has ramifications all over the body. If the body's an electrical field, if the heart has to generate an electrical field around it, if the electrical field around the heart has a lot to do with the function of the heart, the minute you slice through someone's rib cage and rip it out, and I say that graphically because it is a radical surgery. That's why if you need a valve replacement, you go transthoracic. So you don't end up like Robin Williams. You do a transthoracic surgery for a valve replacement. But I'm talking about when you've got 3-4 major coronary arteries, over 90% occluded. You get the whistle blown, the wake-up call. You got to go into bypass, and they're going to bang that chest open and pull. This is the kind of surgery you want to avoid. You really do. It's a bad surgery, but if you're going to do nothing, if you're going to go back to bagels and cream cheese, if you're going to go back to your cigarettes and cigars, if you're going to go back to your booze, if you're going to go back to the lifestyle that got you that way, cost-benefit, it's a great surgery. You see? It's not black and white. But the flip side of this is you're going to get hurt from this surgery. But it's better than being dead. Tell that to a wife who just lost a husband that could have done a bypass but wanted to, you know, put it off, didn't want to get cut, you see. So in a sense, it's a life-saving surgery, and cost-benefit, it's worth the cost. But there is a cost. Now, alternatives. Again, number one. A lot of times they can put in stents. So let me explain. If you've got, say, 4 arteries to the heart, and 2 of them are 90% occluded, and the other 2 are 50 or 60% occluded, they may do the quadruple bypass because in their minds they figure, why go in once, just do 2, when there are 2 more that are going to be 90% occluded in 3 years? You see? But there's an alternative there. Let's say they went in to the 2 arteries that were 90% occluded and put in stents. They take that section of the artery, clean it out, and put in a stent. Let's say you have 2 stents. Stents are relatively non-invasive. Now you have 2 of the 4 arteries, and 2 have been cleaned out, and you have 2 stents in. Those stents can last a decade. They can last longer. And then you go to town on the other 2 arteries that are 50 to 60% occluded. Can you melt plaque? Yes. Again, you have to get radical. Plan on bringing your LDLs down under 100. No one does that. Pritikin did it. People that do it will melt plaque. There are mechanisms in the body, intact physiological systems that will melt plaque. The reason we don't have caseloads of people who have melted plaque is because no one does it. You know, you think when people are facing death that they're going to change their habits. I have news for you if you think that. Think again. Most people, even facing death, will not change their habit. Remember that famous ad of the person that had the person that had lung cancer, and they were smoking the cigarette through a hole in their throat? Remember that ad? I think it was a woman who'd been ravaged by lung cancer, but she's still smoking the cigarette through a hole in her throat. Graphic, hard to look at. But a lot of people will go to their grave before they change their habit. And so you got to understand the reality then of someone that's got 4 arteries that are in trouble, 2 that are 50% occluded, 60% occluded, the other 2 are over 90% occluded. From the standpoint of cardiology, It is medical ethics. It's smart. It's a good betting pattern to do a quadruple bypass. And by doing that, hey, by doing that, you're simply going to save a life, and it's worth what it costs. But if you can just do two stents and save cutting open a chest and then melt that plaque, at least you want to know you have the option. At least you want to know you have the option to try. At least if you try and you fail, well, you tried. At least you want to be informed. That's the thing. You want to be informed. The thing that gets me is people are not informed. People do things and they're not told. Somehow medical ethics says, I'll give you another one. Cutting out your thyroid. The thyroid gland. You know what we do regularly when we see nodules on the thyroid? We just take out the whole thyroid gland. This one kills me. It really does. There's just no excuse for this. Your thyroid gland is enlarged. That's alarming. They ultrasound it or scan it, and they tell you there's a mass. We don't know what the mass is, but it could be cancer. We're not sure. A lot of times they don't go to biopsy. It's skip the biopsy, go to the thyroidectomy. This happens regularly. Very often just on prospect that the enlarged thyroid, since it's a mass, it's confirmed via ultrasound, it's a mass. Just because it's a mass, well, why not just cut the whole gland out? For thyroid nodules, we take out thyroid glands. And I see this all the time. You see, you're told what you're told, what you're not told. What you are told is, well, we take out the thyroid gland, and yes, it is an important part of your body, and so what we're going to do is we're going to supplement you with synthetic Synthroid. It doesn't matter. Whether it's pig thyroid or synthetic, it doesn't matter. Here's what you're not told. There's something called a feedback loop. And what that means is, in any given moment, the amount of T4 that your thyroid puts out is read. It's analyzed by your hypothalamus. And depending upon whether the hypothalamus, the central junction of your entire nervous system, whether that hypothalamus thinks you have too much T4, too little T4, or just the right amount of T4 for the moment. I mean moment. I mean, this is assessed every frame of life. This isn't like once a day your thyroid checks in. It's 5 o'clock, 5 o'clock, hypothalamus goes to work, assays the thyroid. No, this is 24/7. That hypothalamus monitors the amount of thyroxine. And if there's too much, the hypothalamus tells the thyroid slow down. If there's too little, the hypothalamus tells the thyroid to speed up. This is called a feedback loop. All your hormonal systems work through feedback loops. Now, what they don't tell you is, when you take out a thyroid, there's no way the hypothalamus can use a feedback loop. You don't have a thyroid to put precisely the amount of T4 into your system. And on that basis, the dosage into your body is always too high or too low. You will never get the dose correct. And you will never be the same. People who have had their thyroids cut out are not the same. Well, they are the same because we don't measure anything off in them. You see, this is where it's tricky. This is why people have to get sensitized. Meaning lots of people are so numb to their body that they wouldn't know if they had a finger cut off. I'm barely kidding. I am barely kidding. The more disconnected we get from the Earth's magnetic fields, meaning the more we wrap ourselves in plastic and stick our head in microwaves and computers, the less sensitized we are to the magnetic fields of our own body. That is the reality of where we're going. That is the reality of where we're going. And on that basis, don't think that the average person is going to be able to determine the implications of having their thyroid gland cut out. You can't think that way. You have to understand what's going on here. It really is becoming not a lot different than Brave New World. Yeah. All these people that say these things, but there is something going on. It's not conspiratorial to say there's something going on. It is not conspiratorial. And the ramifications go right into your daily experience. You know, the great challenge to health today is if you watch, if you study John Q. Public from the time he wakes up to the time he goes to sleep, there isn't one thing he does that isn't detrimental to his health. This is where we're challenged. When you get bad news and all of a sudden it's time to get healthy, against that there isn't one bad thing, there isn't one catastrophe you're not doing to yourself from the time you get up to the time you go to bed, just to get to zero is radical. I'm not talking about getting healthy. I'm talking just to get to the point where you're not harming yourself through every step of your day is a radical transition, let alone getting healthy. So, you have a thyroid nodule? Think 10 times before you get the thyroid cut out. Here's a solution. Let me tell you how bad it is. This is how bad it is. What they ought to do is take half the thyroid gland. I mean, this is really, really basic. This is like stage. This is kindergarten. Kindergarten. This is how bad it is. If you have a thyroid nodule on one of the lobes, say the left lobe of the thyroid, you can't even find a surgeon to take the left lobe and leave the other side. If you leave the other half of the thyroid, you will not need supplementation. Your thyroid will compensate. It might enlarge a little. It might step on its own gas pedal. But bottom line, you'll still be able to save your thyroid. Can't even find someone to agree to that. Nope. If you've got a nodule on the left lobe, they're going to go in there and take the whole thing. Where they develop that standard of care is beyond me. I don't have words to support that standard of care. And yes, you can find, if you look, if you pay a little more, if you take my advice, you can get a surgeon to do what you want done. There are surgeons out there who still have common sense. There are surgeons out there that, with discreet waivers written, will exonerate themselves from any wrongdoing and will do what the consumer asks the surgeon to do, as long as it's not life-threatening. Been on this thyroid thing a long time. They just take that gland out regularly. It's a disaster. Do you know how many times the incidence of stroke goes up after you have your thyroid taken out? Anytime I see a thyroid out, I know within 10 years that person's going to dry up like a prune. You age faster after a thyroidectomy. Hands down. So go get a facelift then, right? That's the answer. Answer a surgery with a surgery. Answer a bad, unnecessary surgery with another bad, unnecessary surgery. Facelifts? Just check the website. Anybody that gets a facelift has risk. Facelifts, cesareans, episiotomies, all these things are done routinely. I mean, the residency in medical school that you kill for is plastic surgery. That's where the dough is. Nobody wants to be a neurologist. There's no money in neurology. There's money in plastic surgery, and it's all cash. You incorporate, and it's a cash practice. I mean, that's millions. Plastic surgery is the exalted position in medicine. Not orthopedic, not neuro. Yeah, brain surgery, eye surgery. Dermatology used to be in the toilet. 30 years ago, dermatology, no one wanted to be a dermatologist until we discovered the laser. Now we just laser off people's moles and skin tags and the rest of it. We even do plastic surgery with lasers, which I'm going to talk about in a second. Cosmetic surgeons, like plastic surgeons, that's the residency everybody wants. Plastic surgeries, they cut behind the ears, under the chin, and pull the face back. I put some good pictures of the scars you get from that. Slice through the cervicofacial fascia, meaning the connective tissue, the gristle, underneath the facial muscles, on top of the facial muscles, in between the facial muscles, all tied into the cranial bones, all tied into the hypothalamus. Again, if I had a dollar for everyone I've seen in my office some year, 2, 3 years after plastic surgeries that say, I don't know where I am, I don't know who I am, I don't know what I am, I'm so depressed, I can't get my act together, my sleep is off, I'm an absolute mess, I don't know why, I think it's my hormones, help me. If I had a dollar for every person I've heard in my office screaming that, especially the women who usually get these plastic surgeries, if I had a dollar for everyone I've heard. And again, where are the studies to say that surgeries, facial surgeries, shut and disrupt the neuroendocrine system? Where are those studies done? We don't have those studies done. That's the problem. Then you have to trust people's senses. And that's not scientific. Even if it's true, it's not scientific. You understand the scam? The scam is that you're only your frontal lobe, that your senses, that your intuitive faculty mean nothing. That if 5,000 people walk into a room and say, after my plastic surgery, a year or two later, I started to disrupt in the way I acted. I started to become more, I couldn't put my finger on it, but I was just different, and I felt it in my head. And I know it has something to do with my glandular system, my hormonal system. And you have 5,000 people in a room chanting that. The way Western medicine, Western scientists looks like that, and it's usually women who are more sensitive to their bodies. The way Western science looks at that is, you're crazy. There are so many examples of this. The women listening today to the show, how many times, let me ask you, how many times have you been in a doctor's office and said, this is the way I feel, and the doctor just puffs up and does that male thing? You just must be a sweet little crazy old woman, you see, or young woman. The institution condescends. It's not even the doctor. It's the doctor being told what ethics is, representative of his clan, that lays on you the audacity, the absolute audacity, to tell you that what you're feeling, you're not feeling, because they can't explain it according to the limitations of their science. And that's what goes on regularly. So don't expect to read articles in peer-reviewed studies on the downside to plastic surgeries. Don't expect to read articles on the downside to plastic surgeries when they slice your face open and pull your skin on your face so tight that most of you would vomit profusely if you saw what a plastic surgery looks like on the surgical bench. Don't expect to find the studies. So you got to make a real cost-benefit decision. Now, to the rescue, all right? And you hear these ads on the radio, et cetera. To the rescue, they're starting to do laser techniques. And laser's light. It's light beams to stimulate growth of collagen, to tighten up laxed collagen. It's kind of like an electromagnetic bath. And they play with the frequencies of the lasers. Lots of your cosmetic dermatologists are doing this now. And guess what? I'm going to give it a green thumbs up. You know, as I said, I was going to talk about good and bad today. I think your standard classic plastic surgery slice and pull, You got to think about that. You really got to think about that. Or at least you got to do something to mitigate those scars post-surgically. And when I say mitigate those scars, I mean put that fascia back into the state of flow, which again is absolute esoteric nonsense to most people, but in the experience of people that actually understand how to work with fascia, especially fascia post-surgically, it's a very real shift back to what you would call the you used to be before you got sliced. And I've done shows on remediation of scars and what that really means. So if you're new to the show, just remember, I put all these shows I do, we're up to show, 320-something now. 5 years of shows on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's with two T's. No show like this. I don't hear any show like this anywhere. I don't hear it anywhere. And I wouldn't do this show if I didn't feel compelled to do the show. I mean, I love radio, and I love getting up here every Saturday and doing the show. But the fact of the matter is, I still wouldn't do it if I didn't see a real purpose for it. Actually, it's the solution for me, as much as it's a solution for you. Because I got into all this stuff because I like to see people heal. I like to see people who are up the creek find a way to heal, to really heal. And across four different educations and a never-ending litany of education, I don't see people heal. I don't see it. I don't think holistic medicine produces enough healing. And I think it has to be honest with itself and really start to demand that people heal. But if you do that, you got to change your consumer's viewpoint. People that get into holistic medicine, if you listen throughout the United States this Saturday and Sunday and you take all the holistic shows, they're all selling supplements. Selling supplements or selling therapies. Do this therapy, take that supplement. If you look at people that look at health that way, they don't heal. And yes, some do, 10%. And yes, there's always an exception. And yes, everybody hates it when I say that. But the bottom line is what it takes to revamp your health. Although these little tools out there can be important is not the point. The point is, do you understand enough about the foundations of health to mobilize healing over time? And you better bet that you're going to get radical if you're going to do that. And that we tell people it's not necessary, that they can just take a supplement or do a therapy and it's all good, is a joke. So I'll go on record saying that right now. You deserve more than symptom cure. You deserve more than the resolution of a symptom. You deserve health. And to have health, you got to come at it from multiple angles over time and really understand what the health journey is about, especially if you have disease. Hot flashes have nothing to do with dementia on the way. There are things that perhaps you can understand symptomatically, but against the onset of serious disease, health concerns on the way of extreme issue, you got to have the foundation set. Okay, let's keep going. Here's another one, the gallbladder. My regular audience, you don't have to, it's no news to you cutting out a gallbladder, but every year we do thousands and thousands and thousands of cholecystectomies. The problem with taking out your gallbladder is it doesn't solve the initial problem, which is that high up in the liver, those same tubes, the bile canaliculi that are tied to the gallbladder, those tubes are loaded with biliary sand. Those tubes up in the liver are still clogged. So if your gallbladder is clogged, if you have pain and they snip out the gallbladder and tell you you're fine, the reason you're not fine, the reason that 10 years later, 5 years later, you have fatty liver and everything that goes with it, or a million other things that come, is because the problem, long before you plugged your gallbladder, was you plugged your bile ducts high up in the liver. This is what you're not told. I have two acquaintances right now. I have two people I know personally who, at the prospect of having their gallbladder cut out, told the surgeons, push the stone through. Do not take the gallbladder. Just get the stone to pop through. And 2 out of 2 times that was done, and 2 out of 2 times the gallbladder was saved. Why that isn't done as a standard of care is beyond me. Now, I'm sure sometimes you've got to take it out. But I know for a fact that many surgeons that cut out gallbladders could push the stone through. Again, the medical model says if you have one gallstone, you're going to have another one. So what are we going to do in your life? Go into that gallbladder 2, 3, 4, 5 times to push your stones through? Take it out and end the problem. That's what medical ethics dictates. That's why pushing a stone through is not done. But what aren't they telling you? Go to picture 14 on straighttalk.cc, today's show, and you'll see all those bile canaliculi, the tiny microscopic bile passages way up in the liver, are already congested. They're just blocked. They are highly congested. And when you take the gallbladder out, you still have your original problem. Now, you may not have bad fulminant pain, but what you do have is a dysfunctional liver. And when you have an organ that does 1,600 different functions and it can no longer live with the burden of congested bile ducts, it heats up, it inflames, it grows fat into itself, and you have a sick liver. A sick liver not in the sense of cirrhosis, a sick liver in terms of you depress its physiological, its optimal function gets depressed by high percentage points. You may be a young man with an old man's liver. You may be a young woman with an old woman's liver because the liver's bile canaliculi, its sewer system, is plugged. And that's what they don't tell you. And of course, no one should have their gallbladder cut out unless it's life-threatening. Sometimes the gallbladder can get so infected, so clogged, that while you're trying to play around with it, looking to wait, doing different drugs, all sorts of options, holistic and otherwise, you're risking that gallbladder bursting from infection. This is a more imminent medical issue, and again, it's cost-benefit, but for your standard person with a couple of attacks a year that are told they have a gallstone and on that basis cut out the gallbladder, I told you the other side. You make the decision. Joint replacement. There's another one. Joint replacement. Here's what they don't tell you. When you get your shoulder replaced and when you get your knee replaced, you lose massive range of motion. To get the shoulder replaced and to get the knee replaced with the full replacement, you lose a lot of range of motion. I'm going to focus on the knee. What happens is when you flex the knee, so like you try to take your leg, your heel, and put it to your buttocks, closing that angle, flexing the knee. When you flex your knee, after you've had a knee replacement, you can only flex the knee to 90 degrees. This means that the quadricep doesn't ever get stretched anymore. And once the quadricep doesn't get stretched, the psoas becomes spastic. And once the psoas becomes spastic on one side of your body, say, your spine twists. Your whole body twists. Your life changes. That's not a little thing. That's a big thing. We always say, lose the knee, watch the kidney. I have personal accounts of people with kidney issues that get their knees replaced, and that's when the kidney goes into failure. No connection is made. Vedic medicine, Chinese medicine, many medicines will make the connection between the knee and the kidney, the knee, the kidney, and the ear, the knee, the kidney, the ear, and the emotion of fear. These are sound, veritable systems of medicine that derived empirically. You're not going to do a double-blind placebo study explaining the mechanism through which the knee affects the kidney or the way the knee affects the kidney affects the ear. No one's going to pay anyone to do those tests, and even if you were paid, they'd be very hard. But you can observe this through experience over the decades, over the thousands of years. And this is when you're in the realm of holistic medicine. Now, empirically speaking, through experience, reproducible is the observation that when you replace that knee, it throws the biomechanics of the body off to where the kidneys jam. And all of a sudden, you've got other problems, like prostate problems, like hip problems, like neck pain, like all sorts of stuff that have to do with the faulty biomechanics, the gross insult to your body's biomechanics. May I use that word? My regular listeners, yes, I can use that word. But the imposition on the body's biomechanics by a knee replacement where you can't flex the knee more than 90 degrees is bad. And of course, do you have options to knee replacement? Well, some don't. Let me tell you this. Many do. Long before you need a knee replacement, very often you get a knee replacement. Because again, the standard of care assumes that there's no options, that your knee is on its way, that you're 55 or 60 or 65. Why do it now? Why do it later when we can do it now? Let's do it now when you're younger so you have 5 more years of joy and pain-free existence. Why wait? So we've got our rationale worked out in allopathy. We have a standard of care that says do it now rather than later. We have a standard of ethics that says do it now rather than later when you have options. Any of my shows on the joints, I'll leave the options for you guys to decide. Okay, 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Those of you with health concerns, those of you in the labyrinth of healing, meaning you're lost and spinning, you don't know which way to go, you don't know how to understand what you have and what to do about it. 714-850-1007. That's my office. Give me a call. Do it now. Prevention's worth a pound of cure. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.